The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 726. It's the 6th of March, 2017. On the podcast today, it's a busy one. I have Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals, HZM, talks about the award of contracts for their feasibility study for its 100% owned Araguaia nickel project in Brazil. Plus, Executive Chairman David Sefton and CEO Alexander McDonald of Anglo African Oil and Gas, that's AAOG, explains their business on their first day of trading on AIM today. I also have David Bramall, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil, that's UJO, talks about today's news, which is the acquisition of an additional interest in Wrestle. I also have Oil and Gas Sector Authority Malky talking about Trinity, Bolivan, Victoria Oil and Gas, and Independent Resources, which is actually blowing through the roof today. Of course, James Parsons from Sound Energy is on the board there. And I'm looking at the share price right now. When I was talking to Malky, it's about 225% up. It has hit 600% up. And now it says it's on a big pullback. It's only 400% up. I also have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, plus the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning. And I've got to say, there's a joint position in number five. So essentially, there's eight companies I mentioned here.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Jeremy Martin, CEO of Horizonte Minerals. That's HZM ticker. Jeremy, thanks for coming on.
Good morning. Good to speak to you again.
Yeah, no, it's good to speak to you. And I know a bit about the company because I've had you on several times and I've written a blog on you and I do hold some stock. But for people not aware of what you do, Jeremy, could you give us a brief outline as to what Horizonte is all about, please?
Absolutely. So Horizonte is focused in Brazil. We made a grassroots discovery, the Araguaia Nickel Project. We then acquired an adjacent project from Teck. Consolidated that 18 months ago with an acquisition from Glencore, and we now have one of the largest, highest grade nickel saprolite projects out there globally, and we are just starting a full feasibility study, and we aim to complete that by the end of this year. So essentially we are one of the major next nickel mines that will come online over the next sort of 3 to 5 years.
And I've got to say, it's been looking good for nickel over the last week. It did hit that $11,000 per ton, which is quite a nice benchmark. Because it's been at multi-year lows, hasn't it? We'll get to the news, but I mean, talking about nickel, it's been at multi-year lows. But this seems like a nice move up from the bottom here, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. If you look back to the start of 2016, nickel hit a 14-year low. Last year it came up off that level. I think we hit $7,000 a ton was the lowest point last year. We came up and we were sort of around the 10 to 11. 11 would have been a high point last year. It then came back sort of in January, February. And as I say, we've just now crept back up and we're at $11,000 a ton as of the last 2 days. So it's definitely found a base. The fundamentals are compelling. There was news out again today that the Philippine government is doing another environmental audit through their mines. And this is significant because the Philippines is one of the largest suppliers of ore to China. We've got the LME inventories are being drawn down and demand is good. So I think overall, we're moving into a very positive cycle for the nickel space.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the news out today, feasibility study contract, and you did allude to this earlier last year, say you're in the process of going through these, looking for people to study this. So give us some details, Jeremy, around about this feasibility study, and who have you selected, why have you selected them, and what's the deal now?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a very intensive 6 to 8 weeks. We went out to a number of the leading engineering groups, environmental groups. We ran a tender process, a very rigorous selection process. And the main criteria, we're looking for a group, an engineering group, who has successfully delivered ferronickel projects, has a lot of nickel experience, and also has a lot of delivery experience of projects in Brazil. And we've selected Worley Parsons out of Canada. to be the lead engineer. Their most recent project in Brazil, they've been involved, heavily involved in Vale's S11D iron ore project, which ramped up or is coming online, started in January. And again, they've done a lot of work in the nickel space in Indonesia. So a very good group, and we're very pleased to have selected them on the engineering side. Mm-hmm. On the mining, geology and resources, we're working again with Snowden. We worked with Snowden on the pre-feasibility. They are, again, probably one of the leading groups in resources and mining in the nickel space. So we're pleased to have been able to involve them in the feasibility study. And then on the social and environmental, we've brought a group on environmental resource management, ERM, probably one of the leading global social and environmental consultants. And they will work on basically getting the next stage permits for the project. And then around that, we have some smaller groups, Prime Resources out of South Africa, doing the sort of hydro geology side of the project. And then some very specific specialized groups in Brazil working on the power, the road upgrades, and the logistics. So overall, we've been able to tailor a very unique package, very skilled groups with all the right criteria that we need, and also at a very compelling cost point in terms of the overall cost of the study.
Yes, so I suppose you are, you know, going for the best people for the jobs there. So let's just to remind people, let's go through some of the figures there from the pre-feasibility study, and because they're quite impressive figures. And when I wrote a blog, I knew there's several points I was impressed by, not only the shareholders on the register, some of the biggest around, but the figures are quite compelling. So go through some of the figures if you could, please, Jeremy.
Yeah, so I think first of all, if we look at some of our shareholders, we've got a very strong shareholder base. We're led by obviously Teck, Canada's largest mining company, has around 19% of the company today. We then got Henderson, Richard Griffiths, we've got JP Morgan, and we also have Glencore on the register as well. So we've got a strong shareholder base there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we look at then the sort of the key numbers around the project from the pre-feasibility, headline numbers there are, in terms of looking at the NPV, the net present value of the project, at $12,000 a ton, it's got a $320 million net present value, 19% IRR. But the key thing is the C1 cost, that's the cost of production, will be around $6,900 a ton, and nickel's trading at $11,000 a ton today. So it will be one of the lowest cost producers out there in terms of nickel, ferronickel. So yeah, it's pretty compelling. And our whole mantra has been, we have to develop one of the most cost-effective projects in the marketplace. And that's what we've been able to do. And we aim to reiterate that and show that in detail in the results of the feasibility study.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, one thing you learn about commodities, when they start to move off the bottom like this, they can really go, can't they? And like you say, you are able to be profitable right now. And that's very important, because you see a lot of companies, and they put out their NPV. And I've seen this with companies. Now, you've got to make sure, you know, at what level they're pricing that at, because some of them will price it a lot higher than what it is today. And like I said, yours at reasonable levels at I think 12,000. You did another pricing model at 14,000, and you know, compelling figures. We're not now far away from that 12,000 figure, but yet you can be profitable now. So I think if it carries on the way it is, fundamentally it should fly past that and easy go towards that $14,000. But it's very interesting. So what's next, Jeremy? I mean, does the action start straight away now?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm down in Brazil at the moment. We've got all of the engineering groups on site in the next 3 days. We have a full kickoff week next week where we talk through every stage of the project. We'll be freezing all of the key sort of site infrastructure, the process plant site. Drill rigs will be on site also later next week. And then we're full into the feasibility work stream. So this really is the start point. We've been working on a number of other areas over the last month, so it's going to be very busy on resource work, mining work. We'll be opening a large trial mining area in May. There'll be additional pilot work, and there'll be a lot of work on the detailed engineering on the process plant. And also advancing all the permitting for the project. So it's going to be a very, very busy year for the company and an exciting year. We're moving into the final stage before we push the button on the build.
Yeah, so when is the feasibility study expected to conclude there? When is it ending?
Yeah, so we're on schedule with the award of contracts. All of the subcontractors are ready to go, and the aim is that we'll be delivering this study by the end of the year, which is what we set out to the market, and we're on track to do that.
Marvellous. Well, excellent stuff, Jeremy. It's good to hear that. So, all right. So listen, there's 7,000 people listening now. They like the sound of the numbers and the figures. And I think one thing that figure stood out to me is the free cash flow at those models. I don't know if you've got those figures to hand, but off the top of my head, I think at 14,000 tons, it was, $80 million of profit. Was that right?
I think if you look at the $12,000 a ton sort of base case number, over the life of mine, which is 28 years, it generates around $1.3 billion of free cash flow after payback of capital. So massively cash generative. But today's nickel price of $11,000 a ton, it generates around $80,000 a year of profit. So it's very robust. And then if you move up to that $14,000 a ton level, it generates nearly $2 billion of free cash flow. So heavily geared to nickel price. And as you alluded to earlier, I think that when this comes into production, we will be looking at a price closer to 14 than 12. So it's pretty compelling in terms of what it has the ability to generate in terms of free cash flow.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, if anyone needs any more convincing, Jeremy, give us three reasons why someone who's not following you on Vox should hit that follow button, please.
Absolutely. I think number one, the price point today at 3p is still at a very low trading point. We've got some new research out by a number of brokers pointing to significantly higher share price values than that. Number two, the nickel market is very well poised over the next 12 to 18 months to increase towards that 12-14 range. And number three, we're fully funded. We are funded through to the end of feasibility, and we've got a very strong shareholder base to take this company forward. So I think all of those give people sort of confidence that this is a project that will go forward to the next stage and be a producing mine.
Yeah, I was going to say that's very important that you are fully funded there for this. So it's good news. Jeremy, thanks for speaking to me. And like you said, you've got a busy year, so no doubt we'll speak again in the not too distant future. And until then, thank you very much.
Absolutely, thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Sefton, who's chairman and CEO Alex McDonald of Anglo African Oil and Gas. That's AAOG. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Hi, thank you very much, Justin.
Thanks, Justin.
Listen, it's quite an exciting day for you. You're listing today on AIM. In fact, take us through it. I mean, obviously, a lot of people won't know about the story of the company. So can you give us a brief summary as to what you're all about, please, guys?
Yeah, hi there. This is Dave Sefton, the chairman. Anglo African Oil and Gas, it's a fairly simple but interesting story in that we are buying a producing oil asset in the Republic of the Congo, not the DRC, but the one slightly to the north. And we're doing something which is slightly different from a lot of other small E&P companies. We have existing production, which we can scale up without taking any exploration risk. But at the same time, and that gets us to a very profitable position, but at the same time, we've got some very, very interesting and very well-qualified exploration drilling to do, which, were it to come off, would be utterly transformative as to value. So it's an unusual mix of existing production signing that and some blue sky stuff. So, and we've sort of structured and put together the deal in a slightly different way. Again, we come from a bit of a private equity background, so we have a sort of focus on costs and cash flow through, but it's been nice in a bit.
Yeah,
we were very excited.
Excellent. Well, congratulations listing on AIM. And so let's go around this, some of these assets you have. Let's take us through, you said it's currently producing. What's it producing? What do you hope to get up to? And, what are you looking at? And your exploration targets, tell us a bit about those as well, if you could.
Well, what we're buying is a company that already has all the permits, permissions, licenses in place. So we don't have that long lead time before we can start work. Mm-hmm. As soon as we complete, we have a a workover plan on one well to reperforate it and bring it into production. That led a significant bit to our existing production of 38 barrels a day. We've got a drilling program of a multi-horizon well. That will drill through the known reservoirs of R1, R2, which are currently producing in the existing well. We'll then drill through the Mengo, which is very highly prolific in Congo. And one of my colleagues has drilled a number of wells there in recent years, and they've all come into production. So we're reasonably confident we're going to get additional production from the Mengo. The third horizon for that well is the Geno sands, which in the region are highly prolific, and some of our neighbours who were originally drilling for gas but discovered oil have been getting anywhere between 4,700 and 5,500 barrels per day per well. So we're in the right address. The Geno sands we know are charged, but this part of the well we're going to drill is the exploration part. So economically, that well is economically de-risked because we will have production from the two upper horizons.
Yeah, and all this work you're talking about, over what time frame is this planned?
We hit the ground running in March, and the drilling program will be complete by late August, early September.
Excellent. And so you mentioned there, you know, the kind of barrelage. What is the target here? What do we know about the resource here?
The existing production, as I said, is around about 38 barrels a day at the moment. Mm-hmm. We can increase that to probably, you know, a further 100-150. But we've got, in that particular horizon, we've got 100,000 barrels still to produce during the term of the license.
And just to go back, it's a kind of multi-stage thing. It will do a workover, get production up to 200-250 barrels a day, which would make us cash flow break even at pretty much any foreseeable oil price. I mean, not some $10, but certainly at a $30, $40, $50 oil price, we're absolutely fine at that. So we get to stability pretty quickly, and we'll be keeping the market updated on that during March and April as we do that kind of part of the workover. Then start the drilling, and the drilling will be able to add production on an exploration risk-free basis from those existing layers, and then we'll see what we find in the much deeper layer, which is where the kind of interesting upside is. But the the good thing is here we're not not one of those EMP propositions where it's pure exploration, and if for some reason it kind of doesn't come off, there's a total risk of loss. I mean, it's an existing asset, been in production for 10 years. We know how to scale production up up quite a bit, and that we could end the year our forecast show anything between sort of 750 and up into the sort of several thousand barrels a day of production, which from where we're starting now, that's a very quick ramp up in production. And we'll only know the exact numbers when we get the pipes in the ground. But that's the exciting bit to get on with.
Yeah, so you mentioned that it's at a low risk, and you alluded the cost there is quite low. So what are the costs around about there, you say?
Drilling the main well, the multi-horizon, our share of that is $3.5 million. But the two workovers are less than $500,000.
And it ends up with us having, the target production level for cash flow break even obviously varies with the oil price, but it's around about sort of 200 barrels a day, give or take, and it does depend on the oil price. So, pretty low cash break even. And when we're, certainly on modelling it, when we're up into the several thousands of barrels a day, you're looking at production costs, including full G&A, of less than $5.
Yeah. And just to give an overall sense of the size at the moment, so how much are you raising, and what do you expect the market cap to be around, on list today?
Well, we've raised £10 million this morning, which I'm extremely pleased about. The current owner of the asset is rolling in the field and all the topside facilities, everything, for half cash, half shares, roughly. So if you add on the shares that he is getting issued with as part of the transaction, we're looking at a sort of 12.5 million market cap.
Yeah. Okay. And as for you guys, because it's a new company, and I'm sure you know potential investors always like to hear a bit of background. So where have you guys come from to be here with Anglo African Oil and Gas now?
Well, I mean, I started my life a long way away from this in sort of law as a barrister before getting involved in the industry via working for Cleary Gottlieb, then was general counsel for the international M&A of Lukoil. Spent the last 10 years running a private equity firm in the oil and gas services business. Alex?
Yes, I started my career upstream exploration, mainly in Africa and the Middle East. I've also done some time in the North Sea with people like Conoco and Chevron. I've done a significant amount of time on the tools, but the last 25 plus years have been more in investment banking and corporate finance, but predominantly in oil and gas sector. I should mention one of our other colleagues, Oleg Shkoda, who has worked extensively in the Congo. He knows this asset extremely well. He comes from a background, very much a technical and operational background, having been with Schlumberger, Baker Hughes, and GE. And it was indeed Oleg who originally identified this asset. So we've also got very good relationships in the Congo.
Yeah, and as far as operating there, you know, the political and economic environment, it's all good, is it there?
Yes, it's all good. I was there a couple of weeks ago, really went to identify equipment so that we can hit the ground running fairly quickly. We've always described this as a nice Congo, very stable government, very stable environment. The oil industry has been there since the 50s and 60s. And economically and financially, there are no difficulties in operating in the Congo.
Excellent. Well, at Vox Markets here, every day in the podcast, I highlight the top five most followed companies. And as you're newly listed, there'll be very few people obviously following you. So could you give us three reasons why someone should hit that follow button on your page, please, guys?
Yeah, I think, first of all, it's unusual with small E&P companies to get the downside protection while still having the exploration upside. Normally, people buy small E&P companies for the exploration upside, but at the risk of total loss. If should it fail, whereas here you've got downside protection, but you've also got that blue sky upside. The second reason is that we have got a private equity approach to costs, which is no big expensive offices in Mayfair, keep costs under control, keep this whole thing as a flow through of cash, which is onto number three, which is yield. Generally what happens with small E&P companies, if they generate cash flows, they immediately find a matching liability and go and spend it on exploration somewhere. This is a hypothecated asset. The net free, we've got a commitment in the circular, at least 75% of net free cash flow paid out as a dividend yield going forward. So upside, downside protection, control on costs, dividend yield.
Excellent. Well, guys, like you said, you've got lots of news coming out in the next few months. So I look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. David and Alex, thank you very much for coming on.
Well, thanks, Justin.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is David Bramhill, Executive Chairman of Union Jack Oil at UJO Ticker. David, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. Morning, Justin, everybody.
Yeah, we've got some news out. We'll cover that in a bit, David. But like I always want to do with people, we'll come on the podcast for new listeners or for people quite not aware of what Union Jack Oil does. Can you give a brief summary as to the business, please, David?
Yeah, I'd be delighted, Justin. Thank you. Yeah, Union Jack is a pure onshore, totally focused UK company for take investments or parts of projects. Over the past few years, we've done that, we think, reasonably well enough. We've got Wessel, which is our flagship, and as you can see from the announcement today, we're looking to increase and have done, because that would make a good effect on the company. And we've some good wells to be drilled in the near future. Bisca 4, we have an interest in the Homewood, which is right in between the Brockham discovery, and also Horse Hill, which everybody knows about, I'm sure. Both of them have both been in the news lately. And we've another project called North Kelsey and other things going on around on the periphery. So we're a nice company, tight on expenses. We know our running costs for the year, very low. And we've always some sort of new flow going on.
Yeah. And you're very good at taking stakes in, you know, in sort of projects that have a sort of a low risk profile, don't you, really?
There's always risk, Justin, but yes, it is. It's lower risk. We're talking about oil exploration. Wrestle, the risk is practically gone from that. We've made the discovery, the well has flowed, and we know we can work our economics around that. But we'd like to cherry pick, and people say, if these projects are good, why do other companies sell? No company will ever take 100% risk on a well. A well would be between £2.5-3.5 million to drill, and nobody's going to take that amount of risk. So it's a normal thing in the industry, literally, to farm out, and people take promotes on the well, and hopefully things work.
Yeah, okay.
They don't always, but you'd like to get at risk, as you say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get to today's news, entitled The Acquisition of Additional Interest in Wrestle. Can you take us through the details, please, David?
Yes, of course. We bought 3.33% from Celtic Energy. We consider it to be a good price. We know exactly what's in the well, and maybe a bit more. It all adds, as I mentioned to you earlier in this interview, we know the economics, and every percent that we can get hold of is very, very good for us in the future on cash flow. When the well does come on stream, we'll be talking about, you know, well over $1 million, $1.5 million cash flow at 55 oil, and we would expect that to go on. I'm getting on a bit now. I've been around these companies for years, and I've seen the oil peak, the oil trough, and hopefully we're coming out of it now, and it'd be lovely to see the $100 oil again. But even at 55, we make money, and the cash flow coming into the company, people can work it out themselves, well over £1 million with the exchange rate. And if you look at our running costs are practically the same every year, between $550,000-$650,000 a year. We don't pay ourselves big money. We don't waste money. We look after it, so anyone can put two and two together and say, hey, this company's going to be making money in a year's time. That would give us the operating profit, and cover our costs. And as we said in the presentation this morning, it will throw off excess cash. So you can see why we're hungry to get hold of some more of this. And who knows, we might even find some more in Biscuitthorpe and Homewood. That'd be nice. And we've got a modicum of cash coming in from Kennington, who we own 10% of, and we're fully funded. We've got pots of cash following the placing last week, enough to manoeuvre, which is great.
Yeah, so you've raised that money to acquire that. Now, talking about this acquisition, I mean, back in, when was it? Early January, I think, Lincolnshire Council, they refused planning consent. So what's your take on this now? Because at the moment, you know, the development that you say in your RNS of Wrestle remains subject to receipt of planning permission and environmental permits. What's your take on this, David?
Well, my take is quite clear. If we didn't think there were any, if I thought there was an issue, there's no way that I would have bought any further percent. You know, we're confident as a company that this is, you know, this is planning permission, this is oil exploration, this is development. It's always expected, you never know. And the council did come up with some, you know, people that hate me for saying this, but they had questions which need answering, and these questions will be answered. But everyone did a good job, it was well presented, and as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be, you know, resubmitting, and also if we've announced an appeal running concurrently with that. So it's a shame about having to go back, but the actual delay, if it all works out as we hope it will, the delay is going to be quite minimal and no effect.
Okay, excellent. And so let's say this goes ahead, all the planning is cleared, let's say that. Could you give us, you know, when it comes on stream, what will it be the effect of the company after that? How much, you know, what potential is it there for you? What will it allow you to do?
Well, the sky's the limit on if the price is right. Now, when the planning comes in, assuming it all does, then it's going to make a big effect on cash flows, and the cost of Wrestle is going to go up dramatically. So we're going to have an asset which we can actually place a value on, but more importantly to the company, it's going to throw off excess cash. $55, we're throwing off well over £1 million, and you know what our expenses are. We've no plan on increasing that, and year after year we always come out with, well, I hate the word loss, but our running costs are £550 to £650, and that's what they are. So the effect will be dramatic. It's going to change us from a rigid junior explorer to a fully fledged ore producer. You know, it's not to be sneezed at, the cash flow from this for an onshore production area.
Yeah. Good news. Okay. Excellent, David. Well, as you know, on the podcast, I do highlight the top five most followed companies every day in the last 24 hours. So can you give someone now who's not following you three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah, you know I don't like saying this because there's always risk of these companies.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say, we always do what we say we're going to do on the tin. You can go back, that can be verified. We've set an excellent project, and we keep good company. And that's, I mean that with the operators we use. They do a cracking job, both Europa and Egdon, and that's why we stay with them. So we're in good shape, that's all I'd say.
Excellent. David, thank you very much for coming on, and I look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malky. You all right, fella?
Yeah, I'm very well, thanks, Justin. And you?
Yeah, you're sounding bright and clear and crystal. It's your new computer there. You're up to speed, 22nd century almost.
Yeah, I'm on the case, mate. Now I've got a new computer and it's got a camera. So, you know, nowadays, my Skype people, bad news is that they're going to be able to see what I look like.
Exactly. All right, so I saw a very perky R&S machine today, pumping out some good news there. And I'm just looking at some of them. IRG Independent Resources up 225%, I'm looking now. Crazy. Anyway, what are we chatting about today, Malky?
Well, I've got three stories this morning. One which I was going to talk about anyway is Trinity Exploration and Production, TRIN.
Yes, they do well.
Who came back from their troubles recently, and I saw them last week, and I was the first analyst to be invited in for a chat with them.
Yep.
And then I'm going to talk about Victoria Oil and Gas and Boleven, mm-hmm. who have announced this morning. And then, of course, IRG, who is going to be Echo Energy, and that's an amazing little story to break. As you said, up over 200% this morning. So we'll kick off with Trinity, shall we?
Yeah, go for it.
I went in to see Bruce Dingwall and Tracy last week. Those of your guys and girls who don't know Trinity, because it's been suspended for a long period of time, Trinity is a fantastic company, was involved in onshore and offshore in Trinidad, mm-hmm. and got into a bit of a stick when they made an acquisition of a company called Bayfield, where their key asset turned out to be not quite what it said on the tin. So they ended up running out of cash, and the good thing is that Trinidad has a similar sort of Chapter 11 to the States, so they were able to have 6 months of protection while they sorted themselves out. The good news is they've got a really cracking set of assets there. They were one of the first in, so they've got a cracking set of assets and a good team of people on the ground who are prepared to work for not very much money, and without putting much money into the process, they managed to keep the cash flow going whilst they renegotiated the debt and raised some money. And the good news is that they did pay off the debt, and they did raise some money. They've got the management have got really good skin in the game here, Justin. They've got 26% of this company, mm-hmm. And the backers and the shareholders are very strong. And this has got a fantastic asset base going forwards. I think they're arguably stronger than they were before. Management is very strong. I wouldn't say that I'm criticised the previous management, but Bruce Dingwall, who runs it, has been there all the way through. They've all made major league sacrifices. They've got no staff over here pretty much to speak of at all. They've just got the Trinidadian set up and they're all locals. So my guess that that the value of this business is significantly higher than it is in the marketplace at the moment. But that's because Trinity have to get about the place and tell them what the story is. My worry about this, funnily enough, is that someone will come in and have a pop at them early doors, because until they do get themselves sorted out, the value will probably be too low. Trinity has got a decent fan club. They're right to be fans. It's a great company. I was really pleased to be invited back to see them last week. And if there's a space on the bucket list, I've got a feeling they would go straight into it, Justin.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I bought some of these a while back, and then I sold way too early. And yeah. I continue to see them rise and think, why did I sell? And it's just one of those times where I was going through the portfolio, trying to trim, you know, and there was a little bit of lack of news there, and I wasn't familiar yeah. with the stories I was with other companies I had in my portfolio. And I sold at my expense. So there we go. So that's Trinity yeah. there. Yeah, there we are. So, Bo Levin and Victoria Oil and Gas, what's happening there?
Well, they've announced this morning that VOG are farming into Bo Levin's Bomono gas prospect. This is in Cameroon. Now, I've been talking about what should happen about this for a long time. A couple of years ago, I advised Bo Levin to have a takeover of Victoria Oil and Gas, because VOG was and still is massively cheap. Mm-hmm. Of course, Bo Levin didn't listen to me at the time, and they could have had this magnificent asset for about 25p. VOG is now 60 or so p in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. But Bo Levin have two major assets, obviously, you know, the Tindi prospect, which is their major league thing, and is being sorted out at the moment. This is Bomono. But the point is that they've got nowhere to go with the gas in Bomono, and VOG do. You heard me talk about VOG before. They are highly undervalued, but significantly important player in Cameroon. They have gas coming from their own wells, which they've put into a pipeline which they've built and financed that. And then they've got customers which they've got in Douala. And in Douala, they have got already got a huge number of customers across the board from, you know, from companies who are, you know, just producing companies and people who want to generate electricity. And so generation in that part of the world is, you know, low-hanging fruit. There's as much as you can do, because the marketplace will take as much gas for that as they possibly could. And out of the rainy season, when there's no electric hydroelectric, then the prices are high. So Victoria Oil and Gas are just beginning to get through to the marketplace, and I've been saying for some time how cheap they are. Now they've gone up quite a lot, but there's a, you know, I think I said in an interview recently that VOG could be four times the current price and still be too cheap. Yeah. But this is a good deal for Bo Levin as well, with the activist vote coming up in a couple of weeks' time. They've done something with Bomono. They're monetizing the gas from there, which people thought they might not. And then there's a chance that they might drill some further wells and have a look at the deeper prospects there, which VOG will finance, I suspect, keeps Bo Levin with their large amount of cash in their skyrocket. First gas through the system probably this year, because there's no reason why it shouldn't. They've just got to get a bit of permitting going on, but that the PEA has already been signed. I'm very confident. I've got a buy recommendation on both. They're both in the bucket list for good reasons, and I think this is a cracking deal for both sides.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you know what? Looking at, as we've been talking now, IRG has gone up even further. It's 242% up to 0.2225, and they've had some good news out today, haven't they?
Well, IRG is a company I've been sort of looking at for a while, but never felt that it can be of any good while it was doing what it was before. Mm. But clearly, James Parsons and his team, one or two of the people at Sound, or particularly the backers of Sound, mm-hmm. have decided that this is, I'm going to call it Sound 2, but the point is that Parsons is going to be non-executive chairman, which will be perfect for him. He's a man with significant energy and direction. So there'll be no doubt about the direction that this is going. Mm-hmm. Great news is that Continental, who are a big European hedge fund or bunch of funds run out of Italy, will be financing this. And Marco Fiumigeli, who is on the board of Sound as well, is going to take a big stake in this through Continental and will go on the board of IRG. So there's no doubting that where we're going to go from here, because the chairman of Sound is also going to be going onto the board of this one as well. So this is why I call it sort of Sound. I think this is for the Sound people to be life after Sound, if Sound gets taken over or there's, you know, a huge material movement in the company. But more than this, as you can say by you see the move in the share price, the retail investor is being offered a chance to get in at the same price. Spot 065p on a deal which I suspect now will be significantly oversubscribed. You know, investors who put in here are getting in on the ground floor of something which could be substantial. Yeah. I think the prices that we see now and around this raise and everything else, as you look into the future, Justin, it's going to be absolute history. I think this is going to be, you know how many retail holders there are of Sound who have backed Mr. Parsons strongly, and they've done very well out of it. Now, there's no reason to believe that why IRG should, we call it Echo now, should just go up for any particular reason. But there are lots of deals around, and he's a keen, aggressive, and successful businessman in the oil and gas sector. Yeah. I think there are plenty of people who are going to back him here, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, it opens up a whole new range of options for IRG, doesn't it? The connections, financing, everything. And I'm looking at the chart today and looking at it over the last 3 months. And it's like today's price is a skyscraper.
I'm not surprised.
Amongst a range of low-rise buildings, you know, almost residential. It's like a skyscraper in a residential area. It's like a massive spike in the share price. But I certainly would avoid that for a little bit, because when something's that hot, you can get burned short-term, you know. But like I said, longer-term, it may be a good thing here. But excellent, Malky. Thanks very much for that, fella. And I'll speak next week.
Yeah, look forward to it.
All right, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, it's Boom, Audio Boom. At four, Harvest Minerals, HMI, ticker there. I wrote a blog on the weekend about that. Three reasons why you should add Harvest Minerals to your watch list. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast is not investment advice. It's just information on which to base your research. But check that out if you want to know about them. Very good track record amongst management and some excellent assets there. And recently at a 6 months low, share price wise. And I don't see why that is, because 6 months ago when the share price was higher, the projects are now more advanced. So check it out, HMI. At three, 88 Energy, that's 8D. At two, Independent Oil and Gas. What's it up at the moment? It's on a major pullback. It's 419% up. It was 600% up, so there we are. At two, it was Independent Energy, IRG, sorry. I was just checking the share price. And at one, the most followed company on Vox Markets platform in the last 24 hours was Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AAOG. And of course, I checked with the guys there about the business, and it's their first day on AIM today. Okay, here's top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets, and the last one this morning, actually. But I've got to say, there's four companies at joint fifth position. They are Amrit Pharma, AMYT, that's the AP101 trial discussions, completed with FDA and EMA. I'll have Joe actually on the podcast tomorrow. Also at five, SDX Energy, TR1 notification, a major interest in shares. At five as well, joint Union Jack Oil. I had David Bramwell on earlier, talking about the acquisition of the additional interest in Wrestle. At five also, ECR Minerals, receipt of deposit for subscription and notice of general meeting. At 4, Edenville Energy, EDL, project update. At 3, Horizonte, just spoke to Jeremy earlier, awards feasibility study contract for the Araguaia. At 2, Vast Resources, significant increase in silver, copper, lead and zinc grades at the Fenita tailings dam in Romania. And number 1, most liked RNS today, was from 88 Energy. That's oversubscribed placement to raise 17 million Australian dollars. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.